You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Banzai Retro Club and our mixtape episodes of New Wave of the 80s, and we added 79 last week. So we are going to be talking about 1980 and our the albums that we want to discuss that came out in 1980, specifically. And I have, as our returning guest, it is Suzanne. Say hello.
Hi there. Great to be back.
Good to have
talking
you
about
back.
Talking about another great year.
Yep. Dave is unable to join us for this one, but he will be back for more years, I'm sure. Probably next time around. So it's just going to be Suzanne and I, and we're going to talk about our top pick for a new wave album of 1980.
Great compilation tape. Like breaking up is hard to do and takes ages longer than it might seem. You got to kick it off with a killer to grab attention. Then you got to take it up a notch. But you don't want to blow your wad, so then you got to cool it off a notch. There are a lot of rules.
12 albums, 1 cent. Find our ad in Sunday's paper, take it to your mailbox. You'll get a lot more music. You'll get a lot more life. Look in your Sunday paper.
Welcome, listener. For those about to rock, we salute you. This is our podcast dedicated to exploring and talking about the greatness that was the music of the best decade. If you're ready for the best in retro music topics on the planet, we present for your enjoyment 80s mixtape Auto Reverse.
Yeah, sad Dave is missing 1980.
I know, he should be here. But we will throw in a few extras that we might, you know, that Suzanne and I have probably, you know, in the back of our minds is what would be our second, third pick or something like that, and we'll discuss those briefly too. So, 1980. What were you doing in 1980? You were in college at this point?
No, not yet. Not yet. I was in 10th grade.
Oh, 10th grade. I thought you...
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. I thought you graduated in 79 or something like that.
No. I graduated high school in 1982.
82. Okay, right when I was going in. All right. I gotcha.
Okay.
So 10th grade. What a great year.
Yeah, I was like 16 years old.
Sophomore year.
Yeah, it's a good time to really start... deciding what your taste are in music. So
yes, it is. I mean, that was pivotal. That's the 14, 15, 16 are the pivotal years for what really forms is the foundation of what your musical taste is going to be like for the rest of your life, like the real core of it.
True.
I think we all branch off as we get older and, you know, and start to appreciate different music. Like I was a metalhead, but now I love just about every genre of music.
Yeah, there was still a lot of good things going on with the, you know, kind of that what they're now calling classic rock. We of course didn't call it that at the time, but you know, there was still a lot of cool stuff going on. But
well, yeah, I mean, like you had like Boston and Styx.
Yeah, Boston and Kansas, and you know, a lot of stuff like that was still going on, and you know, Queen even was all over the place, which I had a lot of fun watching Bohemian Rhapsody and you know, watching my middle school years flash before my eyes. But yeah, this was kind of the door still opening, I think, to a lot of the more experimental type of new wave bands that really sort of defined the decade as we went forward. So.
Oh yeah, this 80 is just a major year for a lot of stuff, and it's just the stepping stone. It's just barely. Mm-hmm. You said opening the door, like you're barely opening the door and peeking through a little crack in the door at this point. It's like, and it's about to go wide open in the next.
It's
year
true.
Or two.
It's strange how it aligns so clearly with the actual start of the decade.
It really is. It's really interesting how the timing of that worked out, because it could have been what? Could have been 77. Could have been 84. But no, it was right at the beginning
and
of the
it
decade.
Was revving up at that time. But yeah, I think that this really starts to mark the turning point, kind of the pivot when things started taking over as far as music becoming more mainstream in this. You know, these bands beginning to come out with the albums that were really selling out there instead of the ones that were kind of in the club circuit. So
Right. So, yeah. I know I made a list of a few different bands that I wanted to talk about. As far as like honorable mentions, but let's mm-hmm. go ahead and dive into like our main pick for the year. So okay. why don't you go first and tell me what your
I'm
main
going
pick
first.
Is.
Okay. Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, I'm really excited about this time frame, obviously, and I was really torn as far as what I was going to pick as the top album, because mm-hmm. it was like a monster year. It really was.
Yeah,
I'm
it
like, you know, I'm looking. There's a site called Slicing Up Eyeballs, which covers like I think they call it like progressive college rock from vintage college rock from the 80s, and okay. they do like a 100 list of albums for each of these years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just overwhelmed by the amazing music that was coming out each of these years, that all this stuff was out at the same time, that all these artists were in the studio cranking out these awesome tunes, just album after album every single year. It was just, it's just so hard to not recognize, everybody.
But, I know, it really is. Now, and isn't it interesting how many actually release more than one in a year?
Yeah, more than one in a year, and like, then one in 79, one in 80, one in 81, one in 83. Just, Jesus, they were so prolific that, the talent just spewing out of these people was just beyond belief. So, it wasn't like I look back and say, it wasn't my imagination. It was a kick-ass decade.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, if I have to choose, I'll do it.
Go ahead. Let's hear your pick then.
Okay. All right. So if I have to choose an album, I'm going to try not to be redundant in my picks, but I tried to find another album that could rival Zenyatta Mandata by The Police.
Yeah.
And it was really hard.
Yeah.
It was really hard to beat.
It's a good album.
Because it's an amazing album.
That's a good album. Yeah.
So if you can put up with the fact that I love The Police, this was one of their really, really good albums.
It's got some pretty incredible tracks on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, down to, I think before this, The Police had albums out and they were out there, playing clubs and shows and such. But I think this kind of pushed them over as far as just that really slick, bright cover with the fuchsia and the blue and the opposite ends of the color spectrum, and the three of them just looked so great. They just looked so great. And it kind of built their mystique, I think, instead of them just being a club band. And you really started to see some of these songs just shine, just kind of jump out of their the landscape and become real stunners. Don't Stand So Close to Me was on that record. Da-do-do-do-da-da-da is on there, which, who thought you could write a song and just throw it a title like that together? I mean, other than maybe, the Beatles, Obla-Di-Obla-Da.
Yeah.
But it's a great song. Driven to Tears is an amazing song and kind of a start of, Sting's protest movement, or whatever exactly you want to call it. I remember doing like this nice, cool, slow cover of Driven to Tears with my brother, who was a guitarist, and a couple of other musicians that we knew kind of produced it for us. And it was So it's a little like close to my heart, that Driven to Tears song. Even though ours had a whole different feel to it. But in any case, if you actually, you know, listen to the record, I don't know that all of these songs were on the radio per se, because, you know, as I was concerned, they were mine. You know, it didn't matter if they were anybody else was playing them. But every song on here is pretty darn, eye popping. And there's one on here, like we were talking in our last podcast a little bit about Stuart Copeland. There's a song on here called The Other Way of Stopping.
Okay.
And it's like the coolest. There are no lyrics. It is like the coolest drum instrumental song you ever heard. And I don't think anybody could produce something like that other than Stuart Copeland. He just had such a unique drum sound with just like tons of brush cymbals and echoey stuff going on. And really just off the chart. Unique. It's hard to be unique when you're a drummer. I have to say that. And even like my son's a drummer. I love drummers. They're great. But it's hard to be as unique as Stuart Copeland was, as far as having a sound that you know that's him playing. So.
Yeah. So I knew a guy in high school. He was a year younger than me. And I ended up working for his dad, for an electrical contractor. And he, you know, this kid was a drummer. And his idol was Copeland, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, just listen to it. He throws things in there that you just don't ever see coming until you hear it. And he was just so over the top with Stuart Copeland. And I do listen to, you know, I did listen to a lot of the stuff that they were putting out. More of the popular stuff that, I don't know a lot of the deep tracks, I'll admit that. But I do remember him talking about it and recognizing that he had a special thing that he was throwing out there. And you're right, you know, the drummers, they don't get recognized as much as like, you know, your lead guy, your singer or your lead guitarist, those are the guys that are up front and they get all the attention.
Mm-hmm. And there are a few kind of innovative drummers that everybody talks about, like Neil Peart and such, but Stuart Copeland, I think, is one of those few in that very small class, I think, of people who know that drummer.
Right.
For his sound, so.
Yeah. And this is a great pick. One of the other ones that it was an actual, like, a single release was When the World Was Running Down, You Make the Best of Sora. That was always one of my favorites. I always loved that one.
Really? Yeah, that's a cool song, too. Like I said, I can't really tell you any song on this album that I didn't think was really a superior song, so.
And it's, another hidden gem is Canary in a Coal Mine.
Yeah. Now that you put on that song, you cannot stop jumping around, no matter, you know. I mean, it's hard not to jump around and dance when that song comes on.
Yeah, there's a few others in here that I don't recognize, like Behind My Camel. I don't know that one. I don't.
Yeah, you know, I think that's an instrumental too.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah, so they did. They and that was weird for the time period. You know, you don't just do instrumental songs, but I think that you know, between the three of them, I get a picture that maybe they were switching off whose song got what, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe if it wasn't a Sting song, maybe it didn't have that, you know, the lyrics to it or what have you. So, but right. That's kind of I'm guessing, because there are a couple of more instrumental pieces on here. Voices Inside My Head, I think, is instrumental also, and they kind of chant in the middle of it.
Really?
Yeah, kind of like this, like echoey kind of chanting that it's. I don't know if it's really lyrics, but it kind of goes with the song. You know, like Sting used to sort of ska a little bit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It, that kind of is going on in the back of that song. So
a little bit of the reggae ska sound to it. Which
kind of,
the
yeah. Like
the
he's yelling,
really...
like through the, and the song's just going on. And once again, a lot of heavy brush sounds and reverb and cool effects.
Yeah. Yeah, I. That's something that the Police have always kind of brought also was the reggae sound.
Yeah.
You know, they bring in a couple different... They brought in a couple different genres into their own thing and made it theirs. And they have a very unique sound. The Police are very unique in their
Absolutely,
own way.
Yeah.
And I don't know who really is the... Who can be really credited with the brains behind it, because you got Stuart Copeland and Sting are both very powerful writers, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Andy Summers, I don't remember hearing much about him, so he was probably more support.
Yeah.
I don't know what he wrote.
I guess so, but I mean, you really have a disadvantage when you're in a band with Sting and Stuart Copeland as far as standing out. So hopefully, you know, I mean, I guess he held his own, and I think that he wrote some of the songs. Maybe not on this album. I'd have to see who they're attributed to. But I think he, you know, some of the quirkier songs I think he wrote, like maybe he wrote Mother, which isn't on this album, but I'd have to double check. So don't yell at me if I'm wrong about that. But I think he wrote some like kind of quirky songs. You know, those are more his influence. But, you know, like this little triangle here where they're it just feels like we're very balanced, you know, like to me, that's kind of like very like mathematical looking, like they fit into this pyramid. So. You know, I feel like there was a lot of different influences working together there.
It's really interesting. I've never put this together before, but these guys are not that they sound anything like them, but they're very much like Rush.
You think so? Yeah.
Like
in a certain amount, because you had the lead bass player who was kind of... Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Because you got Geddy Lee as the bass guitarist and the synth, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, lead on the synthesizer mostly, and mostly lead mm-hmm. vocals, right?
Yes.
And then you have Eric Lifeson, which was the guitar guy, the guitar player. But, I mean, I always knew him as a really good guitarist, but he kind of was eclipsed by...
a good word, because the other two members of the band were such standouts
right,
in their fields. You know, not just in the band, in their field.
Right. Neil Peart, Geddy Lee. I mean, how can... You know, you have a lot of competition right there to be... recognized as a three-man band.
Yeah, the bass player usually isn't the guy who runs off with the band and takes control of stuff, but in those two bands that was the case. So
interesting. I've never put it together before. I'm just looking at it. I'm going, wow, that's really the drummer and the bass guitar. They're the leaders of the band, and the guitarist is kind of left off in the, you know.
Yeah, but you know what was cool about the Police? That, you know, we talked in the last couple of podcasts about how a lot of these bands came from England and they were like kind of off the streets. You could hear their accents, etc. Stuart Copeland was American and the other two were British. This was kind of like a meld, you know, and I don't know that you saw too much of that in a lot of these bands. They were either American bands or they were British bands, you know, that there weren't a lot of, you know, melding of these two countries in the main people who were in the band. You know, like, I have no idea who played the trumpets and such in Madness. You know, maybe there was an American shoved in there somewhere. Yeah. But, you know, the two prominent members of the band, you know, were representing these two different countries. So yeah. I always thought that was pretty neat.
That is interesting. I never really put that together either.
Yeah, well, I wanted to claim them, you know?
Where is Stuart Copeland from?
I don't know where he's from, but other than that, he's American. Let's see if we can find that out.
Yeah, on Wiki, it just says an American musician and composer.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, Wiki. Maybe he doesn't want us to know. Yeah, no, here, Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay. Virginia. Oh, all right, right on.
Slightly southern, but I never heard an accent.
No. Well, I've never really heard him talk.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen, like, a documentary on them before, which I would love to watch, because I love those types of shows. Documentaries.
Yeah.
VH1 Behind the Music.
Yeah. I saw them at Shea Stadium, so I think I remember hearing him talk, maybe.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. But I don't remember him sounding southern, let's put it that way.
So which tour was that when you saw him?
That was Synchronicity.
Oh, really?
That, it was a big show.
Oh, man.
It was a major event. I think it was like a one-night-only show. And it was... It's a really cool thing to be able to claim that I did in this.
Yeah, you know, we did a podcast a few months back about concerts and our favorite concerts that we've been to. And we talked about some of the bands that we wish we'd seen. And I mm-hmm. The Police never crossed my mind until you just mentioned it. I'm like, wow, that would be pretty cool to see. The Police and their Synchronicity tour would have been something special. Because you know they're going to play a lot of the stuff from their previous albums, which are most of your favorites anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was an amazing... it was probably an amazing set list. I can't imagine what the set list would have been.
It was like, okay, I can die happy now. I'm 19 years old.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty radical. So, anyway,
okay.
Well, this is an awesome, awesome pick. Love the Police. Love Sting and what he's gone on to do. I'd love to see more of what Stuart Copeland's done after his career with the Police, but I don't know what he ever did after that.
I think he had worked on soundtracks and stuff here and there. Like I think I'm following him on some social media. I mean, he does stuff and he posts stuff and is, you know, all over in different countries, but I couldn't name for you any of those things. You know, like, I don't think they're not nearly as well known as, you know, everybody knows what Sting has done. So.
Right. Right. So, all right, well, I'm going to move on to my pick then.
Okay.
So, when a problem comes along, you must whip it.
Okay.
Freedom of choice.
That is a cool pick.
Step on the bridge. Break your mama's back.
I love this album, and I hadn't really listened to the whole thing in a long time until yesterday and today. I went through it again just to refresh myself. I'm like, wow, they have such a great, unique sound, and they were so impactful on the new wave movement. Even though, you know, years later they didn't have too much radio play or whatever, but Freedom of Choice, that song, first of all, is an awesome song. I love that song. And then Whip It on there is just Whip It is Whip It.
Whip It is on that album. Somehow I was remembering that as being later, but sometimes they melt together.
I could have sworn I just listened to it the whole album today, but oh gosh, if I'm wrong, I'm gonna have to edit this out.
No, that, you know, you're probably not. I'm remembering like an MTV video. But
it is.
When
now,
that, yeah,
here,
but that's like MTV came out like the next year, so maybe that was the first year of MTV videos.
It was 1981 that MTV aired, and so yeah. This was all kind of coming. A lot of these songs, they already had videos, and that blows my mind that they were like setting up to be part of MTV. And I don't know how they planned MTV, but dang it, where did it go?
Yeah, that definitely is 1980 though.
Yeah. Hold on one sec. I gotta look it up again. I had it in front of me just a little bit ago, and I lost my notes. Here we go. Okay, there it is. Well, Freedom of Choice, 1980. So the track listing was and I've never seen this video before, but I knew the song was "Girl You Want." That's the number one, the first track on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this song, "Girl You Want"?
No, let's hear it, because a lot of times you don't know the title because you think it's something else.
Yes.
Let me hear a sec.
You need to watch the video too.
Yeah, let the ads play. Now, funny enough, my roommate from college was here visiting me this weekend, and we were looking for stuff to stream, and there was some kind of Devo docu-something. And what it turned out to be was just a collection of these very early videos that it looks like they made themselves. It was so low budget. It was ridiculous. And it was wacky. It was really weird. They're in plastic masks. They're in jumpsuits with like collars that look like they fashioned from like, I don't know, packing material. And, you know, a couple of the songs Okay, wait. I'm remembering this song now, and I'm not even hearing it yet because I don't think I can get it to play and talk to you on this on my headset at the same time. But I think I'm remembering, right? Just the girl you want, something like that.
Yep. And
yeah,
I've never seen the video before, and I watched the video this morning. I'm like, okay, this is wild. This is a great song. I remember hearing the song decades ago, but I never remember seeing the video, and I'm like, oh, this is a really cool video. It's fun how they keep shooting. It's all girls in the audience. And it's like a small studio, like it would be like on the one of those old music TV shows, you know, where they would have a band on, and they have all the girls in the audience, and they keep showing all these clips of these girls in there, and just the reactions that the girls are giving during the performance.
Yeah, well, it's like, almost like really the girls are from like all like Bobby Soxers or something.
Yeah, it's almost like it's almost like an old Beatles thing.
Yeah,
it's really cool, but it's a great song. And then of course, "Whip It," like we mentioned, is on this album.
Now, did you by any chance see it? Well, I was a little older than you. Devo, I first saw them when they were on Saturday Night Live.
Really?
Yeah, and it was a really wacky performance of Satisfaction. They did a version of Satisfaction. I think they might have done Whip It too, but and they came on in their freaking hazmat jumpsuits with the things on their heads, the planters. I call them. I call them planters.
Yeah.
But in any case, they're known for these helmets that they wear, and jumped, you know, and did that robotic thing that they did. And I just watched that and just thought that was Like, how do people think to do this? I kind of was like, all right, now you really have to up your game if you want to be creative when there are guys like this out there. That's like the thought that I had at the time. I was like, okay, I want to go out there and be a creative person. I really better step it up.
You know, that's a really good point. You had a lot of competition as far as creativity goes.
But it kind of gave you permission to do that, though. You know, that you can step it up, that you don't have to limit yourself to anything.
Yes, and that's, you know, that was like the premise of, or part of the original thoughts of this new wave show that we've been working on. From the first time that you came on with Dave and I, and we talked about just overall new wave, and it's like this was a whole new world of creativity. And I think that's what's really intriguing me now is going back and listening to it and going, wow, they really were on the freaking edge. They were pushing the envelope. Everybody was pushing the envelope just to see how crazy it could get.
Yeah, and still be music and still be cool and have people want to dance around to it and, you know, play it in clubs and such.
Right.
And just it was so affected, you know, like it wasn't, they weren't real people. They were putting on a show. It was not like, here are the Beatles and it's Paul, John, George, and Ringo. No, they were these animatronic, you know, this was a performance, not just music. So you have to hand it to them. And, you know, people took it seriously and I ran with it. It was great. But I'm telling you, if you watch those early videos that they're streaming on Netflix, you'd say to yourself, geez, well, these guys turned into a sensation. It's really amazing.
Yeah. So a while back, this was probably about 8 or 9 years ago, I found a DVD set online that was music videos from the early MTV era, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's 12 DVDs, and it has like 350 or 360 original music videos.
Oh, I want it.
I know. And
I want that too. Where'd you get it?
Yeah.
Send me a link.
Yeah. So when I ordered it, you know, I don't know. I can't remember how I found it. I came across it somehow. I was doing some search and came across it. I ordered it, and when I got it, I could tell this is full on bootleg type material. I'm like, oh man, all right. So we would put this on at just random parties that we'd have. We'd throw these DVDs in, and people would be just like totally sucked into
like transfixed
to the TV. Yeah. They couldn't break away because everybody's our age. You know, we all grew up with that TV. And everybody asked me, like you, how do I get it? Like, I looked it up afterwards, and the site is gone. Everything is gone. I have, like, this one copy of it. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I hope these discs never go bad, you know?
Yeah, can you pirate them, you know, like, give me a bootleg of the bootleg?
So, well, I did rip them to a USB drive, so I have them all on my computer now. So that I have them saved in several places because they're precious now.
Okay, and so were there bands that you heard of, or they were underground bands that you really didn't know, and they were really, like, you know, homemade? What's with things?
No, this was all mainstream MTV.
Was
all like the original, you know, all the videos that we grew up with from 1981 to, you know, 1989 when they stopped really playing music that much. But these are all the originals, and we watch them every once in a while, and we think, wow, they're really pushing the envelope on creativity like we're talking about. That's what I'm trying to bring this whole story back to, is like what you said, you know, they had this permission to be creative. In fact,
yes.
they gave
everybody permission to whatever you want to do out there. You know, I dare you to be as weird as this. So.
Right. They didn't just give permission. They were encouraging weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, just go for it, man. Do whatever you want. And there's some great, creepy, bizarre, amazing videos out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is fun. We did a show previously just on music videos, and I was elated to talk about that stuff. I was giddy with music videos.
I somewhat remember those early videos being like everybody wanted to make a little movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of like the lead singer was running and chasing after some girl and she rebuffed him, and then he's walking next to the river, and then, you know, she's at a restaurant with someone else and they're fading. But, you know, it was all like this little romance story or something that was like squashed into a 3-minute video song. And, you know, the curtains are always blowing and the blue light is always coming through, and they created their own little tropes, and it's kind of funny looking back on it. But at the time, it was just so emotional and nobody had ever done this. We never saw these bands except, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, on Don Kirshner's rock concert. And, you know, even
or
then,
Saturday Night Special. Saturday Night Special,
now and then somebody would come on American Bandstand and it would be fun, but those were never like the real, you know, edgy bands. It was like, you know, Madonna would come on and that kind of thing. So, you know, you never really saw these people before.
Yeah.
They never had the opportunity to, like, play out these little stories for us.
Yeah, so, I still don't know if I understand the song Whip It, though. From going back to the album that I mentioned, I still don't know if I understand it other than it's just a fun song.
Yeah. I guess do you really have to overanalyze it? It's kind of like, I don't know. Keep everything in line. That's all I got. You know, does it matter? This is, it was able to be almost like haiku, like poetry. Like it can be imagist. It doesn't really have to make sense and have a narrative.
Right. So like one of the lyrics, okay. When a problem comes along, you must whip it.
Mm-hmm.
If the cream sets out too long, you must whip it.
Like whipped cream? It's whipped cream. He's just like, all right, write a song about things you whip. Okay. I'm up for it. Let's go.
Yeah. So there's a lot of these other songs that are on this album are nice deep cuts, and if you listen to it, you get the sound of what you know as Devo.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with the rest of the album at all, or is it just a handful of songs?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think I've probably just heard things in the background, and you know, if you played it for me, I might recall them. But I'm not real up on what's on there and what's not.
So you know how we were talking about how the Police have a signature sound, right?
Uh-huh.
They have their own sound. Devo definitely has their own sound, and you can hear it throughout this album.
Oh yeah.
Freedom of Choice was always just a great song, and it had airplay and got stuff. I always thought it was interesting how they worded it. They said, freedom of choice is what you've got. Freedom from choice is what you want. No, it's the other way around. Freedom of choice is what you want. Freedom from choice is what you got. Or something like that. It's really there's more to it. It's not just about the title, freedom of choice. They throw the word from in there sometimes, and it really throws a whole new twist into the song.
I'm recalling when they were on Saturday Night Live, there was this little prequel kind of clip that they played that was filmed that had one of the weird guys, like from the videos I just saw, you know, in the little plastic mask, and he was like kind of jogging through a city and up a fire escape into like a meeting room to talk about the de-evolution of man, which is what Devo is supposed to be referring to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which I found pretty intriguing, especially since they had this very, at the time, that was kind of like a very futuristic type of song. And they're being, you know, they've got these very robotic, animatronic kind of affectations to them when they're singing. So I kind of always wanted to try and put two and two together. Like they're saying the human race is kind of falling apart, but yet they're jumping to some other plane of you know, genetics or you know, robotics or whatever exactly they're doing. So I was trying to find some kind of deeper meaning there that was going on with, you know, them calling themselves Devo. And I'm not sure I ever got it, but I'm wondering if they had an explanation for that, you know, a deeper explanation.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out. So we were talking about Greyhounds before we actually started the show. we had another foster, and we had all these albums up on our wall for when we did our 50th birthday. We had an 80s party, and we had albums up on the wall, and Devo, this album, Freedom of Choice, was up on the wall. And when we got this dog from the track, another one with no real call name, so we were just standing near the wall, and we're like, hey, how about Devo? Like, that's a great name for a dog, Devo. So now I totally forgot. We've had Devo, Johnny Cash, and Elvis all in our house.
That's boy.
So anyway, Devo, interesting band, awesome band, good album.
Yeah, lots of decent songs to come too, I think.
Oh yeah.
Or before and after, I think they kind of evolved some of their songs as they went along.
Yeah.
But I know I remember hearing "Are We Not Men?" We are Devo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a cool one too.
Yes, it was.
And you know, kind of marketing, you know, genius to just, here, we'll write the song and it'll just be about the band. We're here.
Yeah. So, that's our two top picks. Do you want to throw
Wow.
Yeah, I know. We picked a couple of big albums, actually.
Yeah. They're probably... Like I said, it's almost unfair that you can't just name it a ton of albums, because a lot of good stuff happened. So
is there another album that you want to throw out there just as like one that you're kind of competing for first place with this?
I don't know. Once again, there were, you know, similar bands. They just had an album per year. So, I know that in 1979, we were talking about one of the Talking Heads albums.
Right.
Remain in Light came out in 1980, and that was a huge album with some really cool songs on there. Including, there is one song on that album called Once in a Lifetime.
Oh, man.
Which is, like, to me, is one of the defining songs of the 80s.
It is. It's iconic. It really is.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I kind of considered that when I was in college, me and my four roommates, we kind of considered that just like the theme song of our lives. It was, and I don't know, like I said, a lot of these lyrics got kind of cryptic and kind of, you know, poetic, and it was kind of like, you know, reading literary fiction where you're like, what the heck is going on? I don't know. But what I assigned to this, you know, first of all, this whole bit, you may find yourself living in a shotgun shack, you might find yourself on the other side of the world, and he comes to this, you know, this conclusion, you know, this is not my beautiful wife, this is not my beautiful house,
mm-hmm.
How did I get here? We all kind of felt, or at least I felt, like when you're a young person, you're a college student, you're facing the beginning of your life, you're kind of like, I have no idea what's going to happen to me. Am I going to turn around 10 years from now and say, how did I get here? Where am I going? This is just like, you know, your whole life is just like this game of like spin the bottle, and it's spinning and you don't know where the heck it's going to land. And you're just hoping for the best and like holding on. And to me, that's what that song meant.
Yeah.
And I know it was probably supposed to be, you know, somebody 30 years into the future looking back and saying, how did I get this life? But to me, it was like, how am I going to get this life? What am I doing? So it's the kind of song that makes you feel like you're not the only one who's lost.
Mm. So I feel like in my youth, I had lack of vision. Okay.
Okay.
So I didn't take a lot of that stuff into consideration. You know, but hindsight is 20/20, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I look back now and think, man, why wasn't I paying attention to the things that I was being told through music? Because they're telling you life stories and how things go on through life and they change and you need to pay attention and you need to, you know, plan ahead and look forward and stuff like that. And I really just, I never paid attention to it then. But I look back at it now going, man, it was right there in front of me the whole time. So that there's a lot of good strong points in that specific song that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. But yet still, then there's just this refrain, same as it ever was. Kind of feeling like, well, you just keep trying and just keep trying, and there you are, still treading water. You know, there's a lot of water in this song. And right. I kind of like that too, the flowing of things that you can't stop, and you're kind of treading water. You know, I was kind of a poet, so I was all into this, you know, these analogies and such. But and then I don't know how many times we just, when we didn't know what was going on, just looked at each other and said, and you may say to yourself, my God, what have I done? Mm-hmm. And we would just all scream it together, just like, it was just like our little code for, okay, I'm in trouble. What am I doing with that guy? Yeah. usually that's what that was referring to.
Oh, yeah.
What was I thinking with that guy? But anyway.
I did not have that problem. Like, and I'm saying with the ladies, I just, you know, I just said I was not popular, so.
Well, honestly, we were listening to this song, like, this song is from 1980. I wasn't listening to this song when I was 16. I was listening to this song when I was, like, 19 or 20.
Yes.
So we didn't really even realize it was that old.
And I think a lot of this stuff that we're talking about now, especially the early 80s, is stuff I didn't even recognize until mid-80s or later. Because in mm-hmm. 7th or 8th grade, I was, like, just barely understanding what music was. So, that... The Talking Heads, I'm perplexed by them and David Byrne.
I think he's just brilliant.
See, sometimes I just don't... I don't get it. Like, there are people that are, like, serious, like, really big Talking Heads fans, and sometimes, like, some of the songs I'm like, oh yeah, that's a great song, like Burning Down the House is so such a part of growing up with the MTV life.
Mm-hmm.
it was a huge video, it was in very common, you know, very often rotation.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the songs I'm like, I just don't get the hype of it. But this is definitely the song that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Once in a Lifetime.
Yeah, Once in a Lifetime. I keep thinking Letting the Days Go By in my head. I know that's not mm-hmm. the name. I know that's not the name of the song, but that's the part of the lyrics, you know. Letting
yes.
the Days Go By. anyway. So where was I going? I don't know. I'm a tangent. Don't mind me. off somewhere.
I think
Talking
we're sticking
heads,
to, we're on
yeah.
very on topic these days.
Yes.
this discussion so far.
So let me throw.
So that's why I would have to mention this album is where yes. you know where that was coming from. So
right on, good. Thank you for bringing that back around. See, this is where Dave comes in. This is where I miss Dave. Dave is usually like the guy that keeps me on track. brings me back around
when you need it. But you know, maybe you'll have to write me in here and there too. I don't know.
So,
because now we should come back around to your other, you know, also ran. So,
there's a couple albums that were next on my list, or you know, close contenders, I'll say. And if maybe not necessarily an album, but just at least one song off this specific album, and that's mm-hmm. the Split Enz album, True Colors. The song
okay.
I got you.
Yeah, that was a neat song.
I don't know anything else by them, really.
I don't think I remember hearing anything else, but that song kind of stuck with you, you know?
It's got a real strong... It's got a strong presence in the new wave world of the 1980s. Mm-hmm. It's just something that
yeah,
I'll always,
very catchy.
Always remind me. Yeah. And then the other one, which I really thought you were going to take this one as your... as your album because of what you because okay. we talked about on Twitter when I threw out the okay. Twitter song or the Twitter post that I put out there earlier today. you came back with a song from Panorama by the
Cars. Panorama was an amazing album. See, once again, that's tough. But didn't somebody mention, I'm trying to like spread the love a little bit, and
right.
didn't, was it you?
I picked
or Dave that picked
last.
Candy
yeah.
O. Yeah.
Yeah, I picked Candy O, yeah.
But I actually owned Panorama. That was a fabulous album.
Okay.
That's why I picked that song.
I listened to that album today when I was walking the dogs. I took the dogs out for a nice long walk, and I was listening. I'm like, man, I forget how good the Cars were.
Absolutely. And once again, when you talk about being unique, it's hard to say, oh, this one was unique, and this one was too, and this one was too. But it's just there was so much uniqueness, and they were all their own brand, you know? It's the Cars were great. That album, they had songs that were just so sparse, and you know, there's a song on there called You Wear Those Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off with just like little, like it's almost like electronic crickets chirping, and then like little drums come in, and it's just the coolest song where he just kind of, well, you know, slides his way through it. You wear those eyes that never blink. You always were the missing link. You know, like it's like beat poetry. It's like it's great.
You know, they're not a stretch from like poetry either. Like the you know, the from the beatnik type stuff from the 60s.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That type of cadence almost, too.
Yes,
their delivery
yes.
of it, yeah.
And it's funny, if you watch the original Hairspray by John Waters, the one before it was a musical.
Oh, yeah.
I think Rick Ocasek plays a beatnik in that film, like a little cameo with Pia Zadora.
Pia Zadora, wow. Was Blondie in that one, too? That was the one of Blondie?
Yeah, she was. She was the original, like, mother, you know, mother hen to Amber.
Right.
So, and that was a weird, weird film.
Now, was that Ricky Lake?
Yes, that was Ricky okay. Lake.
That's the one I'm thinking of, yeah.
And Divine,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, and Divine, exactly, yes. Yeah, that's a strange movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Strange movie.
Yeah, John Waters is just kind of off the hook. I met him once at a film screening when I was
oh,
in
really?
College.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so at least I got to like shake his hand and stuff. It was kind of neat.
Yeah, you know, Dave got to meet this weekend. Did you happen to see Christy
did
McNichol?
I see? Oh yes, that's right. I saw the Christy McNichol photo.
That's awesome.
Very 70s retro.
That's awesome, Christy.
I'm telling
McNichol.
You go back into my journals from when I was 12. I really had some scathing things to say about Christy McNichol.
Really?
Oh, I was so jealous.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Like when she was in Little Darlings or
yeah, everything.
Bad New Bears.
You know.
Bad News
yeah,
Bears.
Well, she dated Scott Baio. That's all I needed
oh,
to hear.
Oh, yeah, Scott Baio. Mm-hmm. Wow,
those pictures were hanging in, you know, in my closet door, so.
Yeah, she was cute.
I guess
you
so.
Know, she had a certain something. I'm not sure what it was, but I remember, you know, being that age.
Yeah, she was very popular.
Yeah. So, that's cool that Dave got to meet one of his childhood crushes.
Yes, that is really neat. Mm-hmm. That is really neat. I congratulated Instagram or wherever it was that I saw it go by today.
Yeah, we could. I could probably have a show on Brush with Fame, and it would be really short.
I think everybody wishes their list was longer. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to just go out and like, you know, stalk some celebrities so we can like bump up those lists. But
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, did you have any other albums that were really important for the year for you?
Well, I mean, like I said, there were a lot, but I also noticed that David Bowie came out with Scary Monsters that year.
Okay.
I
gotta look
ashes.
That one up. Ashes?
Yeah, which had Ashes to Ashes
yeah.
and Fashion. Now, I wouldn't say that was his most monumental album. I mean, he had so many albums, so many great songs on it. It's hard to, you know, rank them. But if you have to rank them, he has other albums coming up that I thought were, like, more defining, you know, commercially throughout the 80s.
Right.
But, I mean, how can you complain about Ashes to Ashes and Fashion? I mean, that's pretty classic.
I actually hadn't heard Fashion for, probably a good 20 years. And then I was listening to, I have satellite radio. and it came on, I think it was like the new wave station, I think it was 33, called First Wave, and I heard Fashion come on. I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't heard this in forever, and it's a great song. It has so much. I just remember it being, you know, when it came out back in the day, being so popular at the time. But man, that's a great song. And Ashes to Ashes too, that's a good song too.
Yeah, and once again, these albums came out, I don't remember hearing these songs when I was in 10th grade. I remember hearing them all when I was in college. You know, they would play everywhere. But this is when they were actually recorded. So,
Yeah, and recorded and released originally, but like, we don't have the exposure that we have. We didn't have the exposure then that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with social media and all that stuff, and, well, you know, the WWW.
Yeah, it's true. And in the day, you know, you didn't, like, if you were just a regular high schooler, you didn't necessarily get the same kind of exposure as, you know, when I went off to college and we went out to dance clubs and, you know, they had new wave nights. You know, then you heard stuff that were from albums from years before, but people were still pretty much listening to, you know, like it was a new find, even though it was like 3 years old.
Right.
And that was all right. That was a cool thing to do, was to unearth some new Bowie that you didn't know about before. So counted. It counted later.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts from you on other albums?
There was. Where did it go? No, I said The Cars, Panorama.
Yeah.
Split Ends.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I mean, there's so many albums that came out that year that were so, well, maybe not albums, but there was a lot of.
There was that first In Excess album. There was, there was a Peter Gabriel album with Games Without Frontiers on it. You know, there was just, it was
now, would you
a lot
put
of
him,
amazing stuff.
You put him in New Wave?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would. Maybe not when he was with Genesis.
Okay.
But as a solo artist, I think so.
Okay. I could see that.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, we talked a little bit about New Wave ballads. I think In Your Eyes is like the ultimate New Wave ballad. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, kind of. And he also, you know, originally worked with Kate Bush. I think he kind of...
Kate Bush. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, who I mean, incredible talk about voice. Experimental. Yeah, amazing. Just unique. Not afraid to take any kind of risk out there. She was one of my favorites, you know, a little later in the decade. So.
Yeah, you know... my best friend growing up through high school and even grade school, I met him in like fourth grade, and we were pretty much inseparable throughout most of our youth. And we were pretty much, like I said before, metalheads, you know, we listened to Judas Priest, AC/DC, and Metallica and all that other stuff. But he had a thing for Kate Bush. Like he goes, Cheech, you gotta hear this. You gotta hear her singing, man.
And, she has a gorgeous voice.
That's incredible. Gorgeous it really voice. Is incredible. But it just always reminds me of my buddy Jim, Kate Bush, his fascination with her singing, her singing talent, and she very talented.
Yeah, she was very mesmerizing to watch, to listen to. She just kind of had it all.
Yeah.
She'd like do these interpretive dances in her videos, and she was a wild girl.
So another album that came out that year was The Cure, Boys Don't Cry, which I think was very impactful.
Really, wow. See, now I'll be honest with you, Boys Don't Cry is one of my favorite songs ever. Boys Don't Cry is one of the best new wave songs out there. You know, but I mean, I guess there's so many. I say that about so many. Maybe I'm, you know, sounding like the girl who cried wolf, but that's right. One of my favorite songs.
No, it's, and I'm trying to see when it was actually released. It was, this list is so long, the one that I have from Wikipedia. I can't find the ones that I looked at. Whitesnake? No, that's not New Wave. So, anyway, I know I looked it up, but I knew it was in here somewhere.
Yeah, and once again, I hadn't heard that song. I didn't hear that song until long after it was out. I became a Cure fan later in the 80s. like more like 1986, and have become much more of a fan, I think, as a grown adult than I ever was back in the day. So it's strange how that happens. We can listen to the whole decade in retrospect now. It's cool.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. I mean, so when Dave started his podcast, the previous one called 80s Reboot Overdrive, looking back at the decade in just in retrospect and thinking about the decade itself is what started this whole thing, and that's how we ended up with this other podcast that brought in the 70s and the 90s, because we knew that they were overlapped sometimes. But yeah, just looking back at that whole decade and seeing the impact that it's had on pop culture as far as music and movies and TV, everything is such a huge impact. So, I'm sorry, I'm going to go on a little tangent here real quick. The fundraiser that I was talking about today, it was at a place in a little town called Safety Harbor here in the Tampa area, and it's called Giggle Waters. And it's like a little bar pub type atmosphere, but they set up a little miniature theater for movie viewing, and all they show is 80s retro movies. Like today all day long, you could step in every 2 hours or whatever, and they're playing The Princess Bride.
Aww.
And 2 weeks ago we were there. They were playing The Breakfast Club. And they just go through whole thing. So it just shows, how much of an impact that era had on today's society. And that's why we love talking about it today.
Absolutely. And I love watching Stranger Things and, seeing the bed sheets that I had in 1978. And she's wearing a shirt, like, through the last three episodes that I was like, I had that. We used to wear the big belts and the stirrup pants and go out dancing in a shirt, a yellow shirt just like that with black slashes all over it. I have pictures. I'll have to find them. Seriously. I was like, I had those. I had that cassette. I had those sheets. I had that shirt, I swear.
So, I think that, on that note, let's kind of wrap things up for 1980.
Because, okay, if we must.
We have.
I know these are long podcasts, so I guess we have to,
We have. Stick by some rules. We still have like 9 years to go.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm up for it.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad you're on board for that. I just noticed I was scrolling through. U2's Boy was released in 1980 also.
Oh my god. I know, it's so hard though, because once again I'm saving U2 for another year.
Yeah, oh I know, I could see that. I could understand why you would save U2 for another year.
But once again, bam, 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 they came out with just album after album after album. That was just classic, ridiculous, over the top, terrific songs.
Yep. So next episode, we'll try to get Dave back on, and we'll do 1981.
81.
And things are just going to start heating up real soon.
Okay.
81, 82, 83. 83 is going to be amazing. 84 is going to be amazing.
84 and 85. You know, things really get epitomal.
I can't wait. I'm so excited to get to, the first few years, the first couple years, like 79, 80. Even though I may not have had the real experience of knowing it at the time, I know now how important it was to set up those first couple years before we get into the next few years that are just going to be explosive.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just wanted to say that.
So we're gearing up.
Gearing up, man. Gearing up. Just getting started. Really.
Okay.
All right. So do you want to throw out your social media information real quick?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So... Suze Mattaboni on Twitter, SuzanneMattaboni.com, and Suzanne Mattaboni 80s on Instagram. So, I think I put some fun stuff up today, a picture that I had taken in Trafalgar Square in London in 1984. No, 85. So, you know, I'll be throwing up various 80s paraphernalia that have been saved over the years, vintage classic stuff, in my little 80s time after time capsule. So,
right. Yeah, your blog posts are really interesting. I like your stuff.
Thanks. Yeah, because I'm a writer. I do, you know, fiction and novels and such too. So, yeah. And that's on, you know, more on SuzanneMattaboni.com. So,
right.
Or Facebook.
Being part of the Banzai Retro Club is, you know, BanzaiRetroClub.com, and you can email us by going to, or sending an email to McFly@BanzaiRetroClub. That's BANZAI RetroClub.com. And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook through all that stuff. And also, I'm on Twitter as 80s Mixtape or 80s Auto Reverse. I'm sorry, 80s Auto Reverse. I flip back and forth between Mixtape and Auto Reverse. So,
appropriately.
80s Auto Reverse. Yeah, right. Flip back and forth between Auto Reverse. That's funny. You caught that. That's good.
How clever.
So, yeah, that's please go on if you have an iPhone or something, go, please leave a review for us, and whether it's good or bad, really, I'll take any criticism, and we'll try to improve on it if you give us a, you know, if you say we can do something better. But anyway, if you love the show, please go out there and review us and leave a rating for us. That way we can get more exposure and just have more fun with this, because that's what this is all about. It's just about fun. So,
sounds good. Great to be part of it.
Thank you, Suzanne, for being back, and I look forward to talking to you about 1981.
Okay, great. Thanks again.
And like Dave likes to say at the end of every show, be excellent to each other and have a good whatever.
Will do.
Take care.
This has been a Banzai Retro Club production.
Banzai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Banzai!
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 'Kay. Thanks again. That was a lot of fun. I love talking about this stuff.
I know, me too.
Such a fun time. And
I'm not going to run out of things to say, I think.
That's good. No, we welcome. Just like, you know, I can go on and on. You got to be careful when you talk to me. I won't shut up until you tell me to shut up sometimes. Like, if I'm out at social events for the dogs or whatever, I'm either the Greyhound guy or the podcast guy, you know, who won't shut up about the Greyhounds or won't shut up about podcasts.
Uh-huh. All right, well, I'm trying very hard to be considerate and let you and or Dave talk and not just, like, run off at the mouth like crazy.
Really?
About the music and my youth, so.
Yeah, no, we love the stories. I think the stories are what people relate to.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
No, definitely.
I have fun with them.
Cool. All right. Well, awesome.
Okay.
You have a good rest of your evening. I'm going to go chill and probably watch a Forensic Files or something and hang out with my wife for a little bit. So.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Have fun.
Right. Cool.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.